I think we're ready to begin. Sometimes the sender is important. Sometimes the person who sends is actually more important than what the message itself might be. If I were to send you an invitation to Buckingham Palace, you probably wouldn't be very excited by that, unless you were very excited by the idea of going and standing outside the gates of Buckingham Palace and going, look, there's Buckingham Palace. Or as perhaps a group of young people infamously did a good few years back now, went and stood outside Buckingham Palace asking unsuspecting tourists, do you know where Buckingham Palace is? But if the Queen sent you an invitation to Buckingham Palace, you might think of it a whole different way. The sender can sometimes be very important. A little while ago, someone was telling me how they use the functions on Outlook to sort their email. They get a lot of email and they have it sorted automatically as it comes in, so it goes into different folders, whether they've been sent directly to them or they've been CC'd or whatever. And one of the folders they had was emails that had come from their boss or their boss's boss or their boss's boss's boss went into a particular folder, and those were the ones that got dealt with faster than any other emails. Sometimes the sender is important. We're looking at Matthew chapter 10, and we're looking at the disciples sent out by Jesus. Just as a reminder, we're looking at the whole of Matthew at the moment, working our way through, looking at Matthew as a manual. Matthew is a manual for how we make disciples, looking at how Jesus built up and equipped the disciples following him and how he sent them out. And here we have this kind of commissioning, these instructions that he gives to the disciples as he first sends them out. And this follows immediately on from what we were looking at a couple of weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, John Shepherd was speaking, and he was looking at the end of chapter 9. You can see it helpfully titled in our Bibles, The Workers Are Few. And it's Jesus saying, look at all this harvest, all these people who need to be reached. And he had compassion on them, and he says, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. And then we're immediately taken on into chapter 10, where Jesus sends out his disciples to go and to be witnesses for him. We're not just simply to finish at the end of chapter 9 and say, well, we'll just pray about it then. But we're to come to God, and we're to recognize his calling on ourselves to go. And let's not get mistaken about what it is that we're doing. It's clear that Jesus is the one who accomplishes the work of salvation. Jesus is the one who came to show us what true life looks like. Jesus is the one who accomplished salvation for us on the cross, the one who paid the price for sin, the one who we have just been worshipping, praising him, recognizing in song what it is that he has done for us. He's the one who's achieved the work of salvation. And he sends us to go and to be witnesses to what he has done, to witness to the life that can be found in him, to witness to what he has accomplished on the cross. I was sat in the dentist the other morning, earlier this week, and waiting, as you often seem to have to do when you go to the dentist. And I noticed on the side there was this the survey there, which I think you find just about everywhere in the NHS now. The Friends and Family Test, it's called. I think it's in, I'm pretty sure I've seen it in a GP as well. And found it in, yes, okay. And those who've had the unfortunate time to spend more time in hospital recently, probably seen in hospital as well. See that around? Any nodding? Some nodding. Okay. The Friends and Family Test. And what it seems to be is, in some ways, a very short survey. What they want to know is, would you recommend your dentist or your GP to your friends and family? Has your experience been positive enough that you'd be willing to recommend someone else go there should they require their help? Because there might be small things that have niggled you. The chairs in the waiting room might not be very comfortable, but that might not actually be enough to make you not say to someone else, yeah, I'd recommend it. I've had a good experience there. What they want to find out is whether you are willing to be a walking advert for the services that they provide. And actually, they've caught on to something there, because actually some of the best adverts are people who've experienced something and are willing to tell others about it, are willing to recommend it to them. Actually, that's why Jesus here is saying, sending people out to be like walking adverts for him. Because actually, it's the best way to get it out there. The best way is people who are living the life of discipleship, following Jesus, to witness, to show others what it looks like, to tell others what it means. It's the best witness. It's the best advert. And we need to both be those people who are doing that, but also to raise up others, to raise up disciples who will go out and be those walking adverts for this life following Jesus. It's a reasonably pivotal point in reaching chapter 10 and Jesus sending out his disciples for the first time like this. So it's worth just taking a little look at where we've been as we've worked our way through Matthew to this point and see what's been going on. All the way back in chapter 4 of Matthew, we see that Jesus called disciples to follow him. You can read about it in chapter 4. Jesus called the first disciples to follow him. And then we see Jesus doing a whole bunch of teaching that he taught them, a whole load, the Sermon on the Mount, which is chapters 5 to 7 of Matthew. And then we see him showing them what it is he's about. That in chapters 8 and 9 that we've been looking at over recent months, the miracles that Jesus performs, the questions that he answers, the faith that we begin to see people placing in him. And now we reach this point where they are sent by him, commissioned to go. And they're commissioned actually to go and to do the same things that Jesus had been doing. When we looked at the beginning of Matthew, we saw how John the Baptist came preaching to people, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is near." And then we see Jesus come along in Matthew chapter 4, verse 17. And a little summary that Matthew gives us of what Jesus is doing in that verse says, "And Jesus went about telling people, 'Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near.'" And then we see Jesus sending out his disciples, and he says to them in verse 7, "As you go, proclaim this message, 'The kingdom of heaven has come near.'" They're sent out with the same message. And actually, they're sent out to do the same things. We've just seen Jesus going around healing people, performing miracles. And in verse 8, he tells his disciples what they're to go out and do is to heal those who are ill, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Sometimes as we see the amazing things that Jesus does, we can get caught up in thinking that those things that he does are what prove that he's God. That the miracles he performs are what proves who he is, his identity as the Son of God. But it's not the case, because he says here to his disciples that they're to go out and to do the same. What proves who Jesus is things like the fact that he forgives sins. It's only God who can forgive sins. Jesus sends the Holy Spirit. It's only God who can send the Holy Spirit. But those things, those miracles he performs, he sends his disciples, those who follow him, to go and do the same. And of course, that's a lovely, very simple PowerPoint kind of flowchart thing. And of course, it's not that simple because the disciples went out and they had some problems. They come back to Jesus. He teaches them some more. They're still journeying with Jesus. They still see more of what he does. It's not a simple linear line that you just work your way through and you've reached the end of it. All those things actually go on a bit more sometimes in tandem. But we see some of the things that Jesus is going about doing as he raises up disciples and some of the things that we too need to do. That we need to call people to follow Jesus. That there are things that we need to know, things that we need to teach about what it means to live this life. But that actually just words, just teaching it isn't enough. We need to be an example. We need to model for people what this life looks like in following Jesus, to allow people to come with us. And there's times where we have to encourage people to hear from God what it is he's calling them to do, to commission, to release them, to go about and to do it. So Jesus sends off his disciples. He sends us out. And as we go and as we send others, there's things that we can learn here from what Jesus says in chapter 10. It's a long passage, there's a lot there, and you'll be really pleased to know that there's only two things that I want to share with you this morning from it. Smiles all round, this is lovely. The bad thing is that you're not going to like the first one, okay? Because the first one is the promise of persecution. Even in the little snippet that we heard read of this chapter, you picked up, that this is not an easy walk. This is not an easy life. As we work through the chapter, it seems to start off not so bad. It seems like Jesus is kind of perhaps easing in his disciples gently. Pick it up if you want in chapter 10, verse 11, page 975, if you haven't got one of the Bibles open. chapter 10, verse 11. Whatever town or village you enter, search there for some worthy person and stay at their house until you leave. As you enter the house, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, leave that home or town and shake the dust off your feet. He seems to begin by suggesting that that we're going to have a mixed reception. That some people will be welcoming and be receptive and want to hear what they have to say. Others won't. Others won't want to hear it. They'll turn them away and they'll just shake the dust of their feet and walk off. And of course, many of us, I'm sure, have had that experience. That we know there's some people who are keen and interested and want to know more about what it means to be a Christian, what it means to follow Jesus, and others who just the mention of church can be a really negative thing. I get this quite a lot. It's quite fun sometimes as a minister, because if you're making small talk with people who you've just met, of course, one of the things that you might often ask or get asked is, oh, so what do you do? And the quite fun or varied reactions you get when you say to someone, oh, well, I work for a church, I'm a minister. With some people, they find that very interesting. Oh, so is that like a priest then? Well, I don't usually use that word, but yeah, if it helps. And so, well, what do you do then? Or where do you work? And, oh, that must be very interesting, must be very hard. Oh, well, yeah. And you can end up with quite a long conversation. With other people, oh, and never is the subject of my work mentioned again. And sometimes, of course, we've all known much more negative reactions. I was once, for part of a project I was doing, had to do a survey, going out and just asking people about their experience and their views of church. And I remember very well one person who we went up to and said, excuse me, can I just ask, do a brief survey? I'm a leader of a church. And as he walked off, his passing shot was, no, because you said church. And just the word church was enough to make him not want to have anything to do with what we were asking. Sometimes we'll get a mixed reception. But Jesus seems to be easing them in because it gets worse from there. Verse 17, be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and be flogged in the synagogues. On my account, you'll be brought before the governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. He goes on to say in verse 22, you will be hated by everyone. As Jesus sends his disciples out, he's sending them out with this expectation that they will face opposition. That as they go to witness to him, that there will be people who just simply don't like it. Perhaps if we don't experience opposition, maybe it's because we're not saying anything that's worth opposing. That actually what we have to say will sometimes bring persecution and opposition. But even as Jesus talks about that, he shows them that even in that opposition, they will find opportunity. Verse 18, on my account, you'll be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them. That actually, even in the opposition they were going to experience, they were going to be given opportunities to share who Jesus was, to be witnesses to him. I remember a few I think it was a few years ago now, Stan Bevan, he'd been in hospital. I think it was after he'd had a heart attack. And he some months later, and he was back in church. I think it was his first Sunday back here. And I remember at the end of the, towards the end of the service, Stan came up the front, as he sometimes has done, and just wanted to share something with people. And he came up and he just explained how he'd found himself in hospital having had this heart attack, how he'd thought, God, why am I here? And he found that just across from him, in the bay across the other side, was an old friend who he hadn't seen for, I think it was decades, who was in a really bad place. And Stan had the opportunity to share with him, to encourage him, to speak something of Jesus to him at that time. And I remember saying to someone afterwards, wow, we need more of that. A willingness to say, I had a heart attack, so God could put me in the right place to share with someone. That actually, even in the depths of something very difficult, Stan was willing to say, actually, God, how do you want to use me here? I don't know about you, but I so often find myself, when things are tough, when things are hard, complaining and whining and moaning and asking God to take it all away. Not in that place of saying, God, how can you use me where I am now? What's the opportunity that you've put me in this place for? Jesus says that even in opposition, even hated by everyone, they'll have opportunities to witness to him. Verse 34, Jesus goes on to say, do not suppose that I have come to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Conflict is to be expected. If there's conflict around something about who we are or what we say, it doesn't mean we've necessarily got it wrong. That at times there will be conflict for Jesus' sake. That actually the gospel that we have, the good news that we have in Jesus Christ, for some people can be offensive. The Bible talks about the offense of the cross. And today the exclusive claim that we have, that the only way to the Father is through Jesus Christ. That the only way to be saved is through what Jesus has done on the cross. To some people, that purely in itself is offensive. How can you say that there's only one way? To some people, the cross is simply in itself offensive. It doesn't mean we change the message. For some, simply for righteousness' sake, we may be offensive. On last Saturday, we were hearing from John Wilson at the away day, and those who were there will hopefully remember a little story that he told about when he was early on in his working life, and how he'd been working in an office and he'd been sent out to get some supplies, and the people in the office had said to him, when you come back, bring us the receipt because we'll fix it before it goes to accounts, and so we'll get a little bit of extra money as we claim it back. And so he went out and he bought what he needed to do, and he took the receipt straight to accounts and went back to his office, and they said, where's the receipt? He said, well, I took it straight to accounts. He was living his life a different way. He wasn't willing to lie and to cheat. And I'm sure it didn't make him that popular amongst those in the office who wanted to make a bit more money out of it. Sometimes for righteousness' sake, because we live our lives differently, to a different standard, to different values, people won't like it. Sometimes we're to expect conflict. But let's make sure that it is for Jesus' sake, for righteousness' sake, not for our own sake. There is a difference between the offense of the cross and offensive Christians. It's not an excuse to go out aggressive, say whatever we want, cause whatever offense we want, because we're to expect conflict. God loved the world. He calls us to do that too. He's given us a message to share with people in love. Yes, sometimes people will react negatively, but let not us be the ones that go and just try and cause that reaction. We're offered the promise of persecution because at the heart of it, it's the cost of discipleship. I wonder if the Holy Trinity today is myself, my family, and my friends, the things that people value most in this world, my friends, my family, and me. And this verse that we heard from that Christine read from verse 37 is shocking today and was shocking when Jesus said it. Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. No, it doesn't say who doesn't love their son, their daughter, their father, their mother. But it's only God who can command greater love from us. And he calls us to honour our family, honour our father and mother, to care for our children. But it's only God who can demand greater love from us. It's God who calls us to deny ourselves, verse 38. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. We're to deny ourselves, to be willing to lose our lives to follow him. We're not offered a middle ground here. We're not offered a halfway choice. It's one or the other. It's spare or sacrifice. It's acknowledge and follow Jesus Christ or deny him and live for ourselves. It's one or the other. And the cost brings this promise of persecution, that it will not be easy. But we find good news in chapter 10 too. We find the offer of hope. And again, Jesus says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And actually, it starts right back at verse 1 of chapter 10. Jesus called his disciples to him and gave them authority. Jesus calls his disciples to them and gives them authority. That actually the one who sends us is important. The sender is important. Jesus, the one with authority, is the one who sends us. It takes us back or forwards, depending on which way you look at things, to Matthew chapter 28, where we started this series with the end of Matthew, where Jesus says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. When you find a therefore in the Bible, sometimes you've got to ask yourself, what is the therefore therefore? Got it? Good. And the bit just before that is where Jesus says, all authority on heaven and on earth has been given to me. The one who sends us is the one who has all authority on heaven and on earth. So as we face the difficult things, we can trust in the one who sends us as the one who's in control, as the one who has all the authority, all the power. The one, the sender, is important. And he says to us to not be afraid, to not worry. And it comes up again and again in this chapter. Verse 19 and 20. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what you will say or how you will say it. How often do we come to the subject of talking to people about Jesus and our fear is what? What do I say? Jesus sends out his disciples for the first time and he seems to neatly address what must have obviously been their fear, which is still our fear, and says, don't worry about what you're going to say or even how you're going to say it. I find that quite encouraging because it means they were worried about the same thing that I'm worried about and that Jesus has already answered it and said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Why? At that time you will be given what to say, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. That actually we can trust in God, that we can trust that we don't go out and do this all in our own strength. That actually God has given us his Holy Spirit to help us, to prompt us, to bring to mind things that we've read, that we've heard, to bring to mind things that people have said to us, words from the Bible, that actually he is working in us to help us, not even just with the right words to say, but even with the right way to say it. That actually we need to seek him as we go out to do this, his help, his guidance, his support, his prompting. That at times, yes, he might even just speak through us things that we've got no idea where it came from, directed as verses that we've got no idea that we'd even read them before. It's not an excuse for laziness and to say, right, well, I'll just go out and I don't need to worry about knowing anything of the Bible because God's just going to bring it all to my mind. It's not an excuse for just not bothering to learn and to read the Bible. So God can use our study too, but it is a reason to trust in him. Sometimes, as again, John Wilson was speaking about on Saturday, sometimes it can be a case of getting others to help us. Jesus sends out his disciples in pairs as they go out. He sends them out with one another to help and to support each other. Sometimes if someone asks us a question, as John was saying on Saturday, if someone asks us a question and we don't know the answer, it's okay to say, I don't know the answer, but let me go and find someone who does. And I thought it was a really helpful bit of advice to not just go and find the answer and come back with it, but actually to bring that person with you, that they can really help answer their question, that actually they can meet someone else who's living this life, who's maybe asked similar questions to them. Don't worry about what you'll say. Don't be afraid. Verse 26, Jesus says again, don't be afraid. So do not be afraid, for there is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. I was wondering about this and I was thinking, why is it he says don't be afraid because everything will be revealed? So often when we think about everything being revealed, it's slightly more worrying for most of us, I would have thought. Why is it that he says, don't be afraid as they go out, because everything will be revealed? But of course, sometimes our fear is what people will say about us, is how people might label us or reject us. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. We just know that it's not true, don't we? We know that some of the most hurtful things that have been done in our lives are sometimes the words that people have said to us. And that feeling of that fear of being labeled, of being rejected. If I told them what I believe, if I said that I'm a Christian, what would they think of me? What would they say about me? If I lived differently, if I behaved in a different way, if I didn't go along with that, what will they say? What will they do? How will they treat me? Actually, it can be people's words to us that can be the biggest of fears. And when we find ourselves falsely accused, being labelled for something that isn't us, that we haven't done, turned on by others, we can have this desperate feeling of wanting to vindicate ourselves, of wanting the truth to be made known. And Jesus offers us this promise that we don't need to be afraid, because one day he will bring everything to light, because one day everyone will stand before him and it will be laid bare, and the truth will be outed. That we don't need to be afraid of what others may say, because one day everything will be brought to light. Jesus goes on and says again, verse 28, do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Jesus says we don't need to be afraid of the physical. We're to fear God, God the one who can destroy both the body and the soul. The word there for fear is actually in the Greek is the word respect. But it's such a strong version of the word respect. Our word respect doesn't really do it justice, which is why it's translated as fear. It's this reverent fear, this respect, this awe of who God is. That actually this awe and wonder at how amazing and powerful God is drives out any other fear. That drives out the fear of those who can only harm physical life. That we don't need to be afraid of those who can only harm the body. Because once again, the one who sends us is the one who has all authority. And there's another, don't be afraid, hidden at the end of this passage, verse 29. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside your Father's care. And even the very hairs on your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Jesus says, don't be afraid because you're worth it. Because God cares for you. He talks there about two sparrows. Sparrows at that time were kind of like a simple food. Food for the poorer of people, those who couldn't afford much. It was a basic food. Two sparrows would be sold for less than an hour's wages. This was a simple food that you could pick up cheaply. And so I thought, well, what's a simple meal that you can pick up cheaply now for kind of less than an hour's wages? So there we go, thank you. Less than an hour's wages, simple, but effective, if you like that kind of thing. It's a bit like Jesus saying, God cares, God knows and cares about every Big Mac meal that is eaten. It's a bit like what he's saying. God knows and cares about every Big Mac meal that's eaten. And the point is, so how much more does he care about you? And he goes on to say, he's numbered the very hairs on your head. We often tell children that like, he knows how many hairs are on your head, but that's not quite what he says. He says that he's numbered them. That actually, he's got numbers for those ones. I mean, he's got to wipe them off now and maybe start again. But he knows which number ones I just pulled out. That actually, that's the level of care that God has for us. That he thinks you're worth that much, that he cares that much about you and about me. So as we face the rubbish stuff of life, things that might come our way if we really step out and witness to him in what we do and what we say, that actually he cares about us that much. The one with authority has numbered the hairs on my head. And it's not. This isn't a great thing as a preacher to say, but I don't really have the words to explain more than that. God's level of care for me and for you. So it's going to be hard. There's the promise of persecution. We're sent by Jesus, but we're sent by the one who has authority, who says to us that we don't need to be afraid, that we can persevere with him. 1 Corinthians says this, therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. We can stand firm in whatever comes against us because we're sent by Jesus, by the one with authority, sent to be these walking, living adverts, witnesses for him.